Big East or Atlantic Coast Conference. North Carolina, which lost to Florida State in the ACC semifinals, dropped one spot to second. Memphis, which has won 25 consecutive games, moved up one place to third, while Pittsburgh and Connecticut, both quarterfinal losers in the Big East, dropped two spots each to fourth and fifth. The fifth-seeded Illini will open NCAA play Thursday when they take on 12-seed Western Kentucky in the first round of the tournament in Portland, Oregon. Illinois finished the season with a 24-9 record, including an 11-7 mark in the Big Ten. Western Kentucky, meanwhile, was 24-8 overall, 15-3 in the Sun Belt. Northwestern's 10-year postseason drought is over. The Wildcats yesterday learned they'll visit Tulsa on Wednesday, tomorrow in the opening round of the NIT. Excuse me, that's not tomorrow. Tuesday is tomorrow. Wednesday is when Northwestern will visit Tulsa. Northwestern finished the regular season with a 17-13 mark after going 8-22 last year. Standout high school running back Bryce Brown has signed a letter of intent with Tennessee. The nation's top-ranked recruit announced his decision from the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame in Wichita today. The Wichita East High School star had narrowed his final choices to Oregon, Miami, Tennessee, Kansas State, and LSU. That's sports. This is AM 580. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. Finance ministers gathered in southern England this weekend to try to figure out how to stabilize financial systems and prevent future crises. The group also helped to lay the groundwork for a summit of world leaders next month. But as Eleanor Beardsley reports, the finance ministers couldn't agree on detailed action.
As the 20 finance ministers and central bankers from around the world gathered for a group photo, they gave the appearance of a united front. And British Finance Minister Alistair Darling, host of the meeting, said there was complete consensus on the urgency of the situation.
Everyone sitting around the table realized that this is the biggest single challenge the world has faced in generations. All of us are ready to do whatever it takes, whatever is necessary, and for long as that is necessary.
But whatever it takes is where the views begin to diverge. The biggest economies, the U.S. and Europe, disagree. The U.S. is pushing increased stimulus spending, but France and Germany repeated this weekend that the focus should be on tightening financial and banking regulations to fix what got us into this mess. All nations did agree to a set of underlying principles, which include reviving bank lending and regulating hedge funds, and greatly strengthening the role of the IMF to help developing nations. And everyone was adamantly against protectionism. But analysts say the vagueness of the commitments mean it will be up to President Obama and other leaders to continue hashing it out when they meet next month. For NPR News, I'm Eleanor Beardsley in Horsham, England.
Jesse Norman will sing tonight at Carnegie Hall. She's performed there dozens of times, but this time it's a little different. She's sharing the stage not only with the Orchestra of St. Luke's, but with the hip-hop artists, The Roots. What brings them together is a poem by Langston Hughes called Ask Your Mama. The poem has been set to music before, but not on this scale. Tonight's world premiere is part of a festival called Honor, showcasing the cultural legacy of African-American musicians. Jeff London reports.
Composer Laura Cartman was going through a bookstore when she stumbled onto a little-known epic poem by Langston Hughes, the poet laureate of the Harlem Renaissance. It was called Ask Your Mama, 12 Moods for Jazz.
And of course, what attracted me to the piece was not only was it by Langston Hughes, who I think is one of the most brilliant poets who ever lived, but in the right-hand margins of the poem, Langston says exactly how the music should sound.
I want to see my mother when the roll is called up yonder in the quarter of the Negroes. Tell me how long must I wait?
Sayirah, Sayirah.
Can I get it now or must I hesitate?
Hughes wrote the sprawling poem late in his career, in 1960, while he was attending the Newport Jazz Festival. He had music in his ears and dictated a kind of soundtrack in the margins of the poem that included everything from blues to German Lieder to gospel and Latin music together, says singer Jesse Norman.
One of the poems is called The Gospel Cha-Cha, where there's sort of African-American gospel music, but also the music that one would have heard that was coming up from the Caribbean.
That's Tammy Jenkins singing Jesse Norman's part in a demo recording. Annie Dorson, who directed Passing Strange on Broadway, is overseeing the physical presentation of Ask Your Mama, which will include video. She says Langston Hughes was paying homage to generations of African-American artists while experimenting with the form.
You know, he's taking in Charlie Parker, is taking in, you know, bebop. He's taking in sort of innovations from more radical artists. And he's, you know, experimenting a little bit late in life, wondering what it all means, what his life as an artist has meant, how he fits into the marketplace, how he fits into Black history, how he fits into American history.
I moved out to Long Island, even further than St. Albans, which lately is known nowhere. I moved out even further, further, farther, on the sound way off the turnpike. I'm the only color. Got there, yes, I made it. Named in the papers every day. Got there, yes, I made it. Named in the papers every day. Famous the hard way. From nobody and nothing to where I am.
Laura Cartman has written something of a maximalist score for Ask Your Mama. She's using hip-hop. She's using a full classical orchestra. She's using jazz instruments. She even has two musicians sitting at keyboards triggering samples from laptops.
When Langston asks for old-time traditional 12-bar blues, instead of making the orchestra do that, which always sounds not quite right, to be kind, I actually trigger the sample of Cab Calloway doing St. James Infirmary Blues.
The quarter of the Negroes where the doorknobs slept in Lieder more than German ever bore.
Langston Hughes is a presence throughout the piece.
We found an old recording of Langston reading the poem. I digitized that, and then what I did is I sampled from that as well. He begins the poem, and he speaks to us constantly throughout the poem. He also does a little bit of singing, too.
Cartman demonstrates at the keyboard.
So the music goes, delight, 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 delight. So Langston's singing, D, 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 D,
delight, 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 delight.
Composer Laura Cartman says she felt delight creating a piece for Jesse Norman as well. They began working on it together 2 years ago.
And I went and sat next to her on her couch, and she sat very close, and she started singing spirituals to me. And, well, I thought I was just going to melt. But I'd never heard her sing like this. I'd never heard her sing that intimately. I don't think anybody had.
Ask Your Mama is really a microcosm of this festival. All of these names, all of this music that Langston Hughes heard in Harlem at the time, the newer immigrants from Latin America and people coming to this country from Africa that were making their music that he was hearing, all of this is indicated in the margins of the poem. And all of this Laura has been able to bring to this piece.
After Carnegie Hall, Ask Your Mama is scheduled to be performed with Jesse Norman at the Hollywood Bowl and with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
It's 10 minutes before 3 o'clock, 66 degrees in Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for public telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of Alice and Robert Campbell. St. Patrick's Day makes for cliches. Many dreary Danny Boys, shamrocks, green beer, and cartoon leprechauns. Irish dance often goes with the parades and boozy schmaltz, but as Illinois Public Radio's Charlie Schlenker reports, more than just ethnic heritage, the dance is intense competition.
No, you still have time.
Okay. Slippered feet slide, spring, and settle. A slip jig plays. In the practice room of gymnastics, etc., on Bloomington's southeast side, tween and teen girls twirl. Dance instructor Amy Elson isn't satisfied.
No. Okay, you both were a little off on that.
Irish dance is centuries old, but has its most recent roots in the 1800s when dancing masters codified existing forms. Reels and slip jigs are done in soft shoe. Hornpipes happen in hard soles with explosive percussion. Elson says skills cross over from other dance forms, tap and ballet.
Certain positions are similar, like fifth position is similar to some of the positions we do in Irish dance, and it's just a matter of manipulating your feet in the same manner. And then they also do similar jumps, too.
But Irish dancers have to hold their upper body still while their feet fly. There is a lot to think about, and 13-year-old Alyssa Wilson says the judging is tough.
They look to make sure that your toes are turned out and pointed, and then when you kick, like, your knees are straight and your arms are at your side and your posture's good. And then in hard shoe, like, you'll, like, click your heels in the air, and they look to see that you make all those and don't miss any of the hits on the ground.
Competitions are called feshes. There are 7 classes, ranging from first fesh to open championship level, and several steps for each of several dances.
A lift is a change to three, what she just did, like that.
Claire Bow started dancing as a first grader 5 years ago because she liked the moves where you can make a statement.
So what you do is, like, you basically jump up and you kick up your front leg, and then your back leg goes in the back, and then you kick your back leg through, and then you land.
At age 10, Claire is only one rung down from the top class. She recently finished in the middle of the pack at the All-Ireland competition in Killarney. Claire is one of 15 dancers at the studio in Bloomington. Like quarterbacks, some record their practices and review video for bobbles and misplaced feet. There is risk of injury.
Lots of sprained ankles, and that's the most common. And then it's other things like shin splints and, you know, sprained knees and stuff like that. Pretty common one is Osgood Schlatter in your knee. It's where you get a big bump. That's what my sister has.
Like any athlete, Bo says you have to listen to your body and make sure you warm up again after taking a break. About 12 years ago, there was a big surge of interest in Irish dancing created by the River Dance and Lord of the Dance shows. Barbara McNulty owns McNulty's Irish School of Dance with locations all over the Chicago area, Rockford and Dubuque. McNulty says the Riverdance boost has faded, but it gave a permanent place to the sport and spread the discipline in many communities beyond ethnic limits.
And I think a lot of that, too, is that we have a lot of the dance studios, the regular dance studios, ballet, tap, jazz, have opened their doors to us to rent space. So we do get a lot of dancers that just have a love of dance, any kind of dance.
There is even a school of Irish dance in Mexico. And this year, for the first time, the World Championships are being held outside the British Isles in the U.S. The popularity has attracted better athletes to the sport. And back in the practice room in Bloomington, instructor Amy Elson says the deeper talent pool has made it a living, changing dance form as those competitors try to showcase their strengths. Elson says this is not an unmixed blessing.
It is evolving a lot into some things that I don't appreciate as much.
Elson says sometimes people forget where the dance came from as they create new moves. There's one called a bicycle. The dancer jumps and whips the legs forward and back. Some track runners do this too. And Elson says the jumps are soaring ever higher.
I remember competing against one girl who was the world champion, and she literally jumped over my head while I was standing right next to her, so that was intimidating.
The young girls in McLean County, dreaming of world championships, are already thinking like athletes. Claire Bow proves out the old saying, peak performance is as much mental as physical.
You kind of zone out everything else and you're just kind of, it's, you're dancing, you know, and it's just like you. And sometimes if you're nervous, you just kind of have to definitely zone out everyone. Like you're the only one and like you're practicing at home because that's when you're most relaxed.
And behind the embroidered costumes, curly locks, and love of the music, there's a long time in exercise clothes, sweating with steely determination. I'm Charlie Schlenker, WGLT News.
Yeah, okay, so the problem is the bit right before the point and point. I think you have from there on, right, you're just...
A Michigan church is laying off staff and trimming back programs, but not its ministry to the poor.
We will, at a time when we're reducing our budget, see more money given away probably than ever has been given in the life of Fairhaven.
Churches finding creative ways to cope with the recession. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 p.m.
Earth and Sky.
Human embryonic stem cell lines are cultures of human cells. Many scientists believe in their potential to cure diseases and repair human tissues. Beginning in 2001, President Bush limited federal funding for stem cell research to only those few cell lines approved by him.
The cell lines that Bush had approved are really not very good. And so the people who have been able to work on them with federal funding, they've been inhibited by the fact that they weren't dealing with the best cells that they should have been.
That's MIT professor Richard Hines, who in 2005 helped the U.S. National Academy of Sciences create guidelines for stem cell use. He's speaking about President Barack Obama's 2009 move to lift Bush's limits on stem cell research.
They'll now be able to do that, to work on all these multiple cell lines that are out there and will be approved. And it will make available more funding for more people.
Bush had approved 21 already existing stem cell lines. In 2009, the National Institutes of Health is considering the use of about 700 new cell lines, Hines said.
Those lines can be made available to anybody who requests them. In many cases, scientists will make lines available to other people so that everybody can use the best materials. And that's what will be possible now.
This is Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
WIL programming is made possible by Strawberry.